We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is the Dale and Keith Show. Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
There's a piece on ESPN.com today. It's called "The Bucks Built It. Tom Brady Came. Now What? Inside the GOAT's Ultimate Gamble." It was written by Ian O'Connor. Ian joins us now on the Harbor One Hotline. Ian, it's Dale, Rich, and Wiggy. How are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Very well, thank you. There was a point in your piece today about the pursuit of Tom Brady by the Buccaneers in which you quote, an anonymous friend of Tom Brady's is saying, he was Belichicked out after 20 years. So When we brought that up a minute ago, we said, yeah, but if they offered him what Tampa Bay offered him, would he still be here?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Of course, that offer never came. I think if I'm Tom Brady, I would have stayed. Frankly, if you're just trying to run up your ring count to seven and do something Michael Jordan didn't even do, then I think the New England Patriots presented a better opportunity to do that than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I don't know if it was just about winning. I do believe that he was looking for a change in approach and talking to people in and around the situation. The idea of playing for someone like Bruce Arians, who basically is pretty much a stand-up comic compared to Belichick, I think had some appeal to him. And so I do think that was a part of it. I don't think there was, to my knowledge, there was no incident between Brady and Belichick, and I think their relationship was actually better than it was in 2017. But after 20 years of being coached in an unforgiving, unrelenting way every single day, where every single day is Game 7 of the World Series, including during minicamp, I think that wears out anyone. And so I do think that was part of the process.
And it also seems like the Bucks and maybe a lot of other teams in the NFL were like, yeah, Tom Brady's a free agent, but realistically, is he going to go anywhere?
Yeah, I think a lot of people had that feeling. Even Jason Light, a former Belichick guy, of course, in New England twice with Belichick, he thought, at the end of the day, Tom's just going to stay. And then I think it was that conversation with Don Yee changed things. And Jason Light, being an old Patriot, still thought, I just don't know if this is going to happen. I think Tom Brady's just going at the last second, decide to stay and retire a one-uniform icon in New England. And so I think he was even surprised that once that phone call with Brady that Wednesday, a 90-minute phone call, started, he could sense the great enthusiasm in Brady to play for Tampa Bay, the losingest franchise in all of North American sports. I think they were as surprised as anyone, really, that Brady ultimately said, yeah, let's do it. We're going to have something special here. And I think even though Jason Light, he's been the GM there for 96 games and he's lost 62 of them, right? So he's made a lot of bad decisions, but he made three decisions that Tom Brady liked: Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Bruce Arians. Without those three acquisitions, those three hires, Tom Brady does not sign with Tampa Bay.
Now, the one thing that you said that's interesting to me as somebody who played for Belichick, when you say Belichicked out, the thing I always related to is the price tag that he puts on players, and guys get to a certain point where they just cannot do it anymore. We had Ty Law on, and I don't know if you heard the audio, but here's a little bit of kind of what Ty said about Belichick and the way he negotiates.
I thought Tom Brady would probably be the least expendable of any of us, of course. But at the same time, I've always said, and that probably was on record, he's not immune to the business of the NFL, and he's not immune to Bill Belichick, you know, and how he does business. It is what it is.
Now, do you think that's a big part of why Tom's not here, because of the fact that the way Bill does business?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, sure. I think Tom Brady, given everything he's accomplished, he's arguably the greatest football player of all time, to, at the end of his career, constantly be going on a year-to-year, almost begging for a multi-year deal. I think he definitely got tired of that, without question. I do think Belichick deserves credit on two fronts. One, he convinced an elite athlete to play for him for 20 straight years. That's not easy to do in this day and age. So he deserves credit for that. He also deserves credit, obviously, for developing the 199th pick in the draft into the greatest quarterback ever. So I think there isn't necessarily, to me, a bad guy in this drama. I think the relationship ran its course in Tom Brady's eyes, and maybe even in Bill Belichick's eyes, and he moved on after the most incredible 20-year run we'll ever see in the NFL. So I do think the business part of it, the way Bill runs his program, is really the reason why they won six championships. Might also be the reason why Tom Brady left. And so I think both things can be true at the same time.
We're talking to Ian O'Connor, ESPN, ESPN.com. He's got a very lengthy piece about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' pursuit of Tom Brady. I also think Bill Belichick was hesitant about putting the fate of his football franchise in the hands of a 43-year-old quarterback. You mentioned that Jason Light has made some bad decisions. He better hope this one's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows that. If this doesn't work, he's getting fired. I mean, there's no question about that. Now, I think Tom Brady looked at that roster. They were 7-9 last year, and he looked at the talent on it. He also looked at the fact that Jameis Winston committed 35 turnovers. And he's thinking to himself, I would have gone 10-6 or 11-5 with that roster. And I believe that's what he's looking at next year. Again, the problem is, in the AFC East, he never had to deal with the New Orleans Saints, right? They win 12-13 games every year. They've got a very accomplished coach and quarterback. He's never had to deal with that. Tom Brady's never lost the AFC East outright as a healthy starter. The one time he lost the division, it was a tiebreaker to Chad Pennington in 2002. So I found it hard to believe. In fact, after the playoff loss to Tennessee, I asked Brady that question. How hard is it going to be to walk away from the AFC East? And because that gave him a clear path to a one or two seed every single year. And frankly, in this division, he's not going to have that, because he's got to deal with the Saints. And when you enter, as you guys know, when you enter the tournament as a wild card, it just makes it more difficult to get to the Super Bowl. So that's why, if I'm him, I would have stayed. I just thought that the Patriots gave him the best chance to get to ring number 7, which I thought was the ultimate goal.
Don't you think with the new rules and the extra wild card team that the number one seed is going to be really difficult to come by, whether you're in New England or Tampa Bay? And in that case, yeah, you don't win the division. You might win the AFC East, but you're not going to be better than Kansas City or Baltimore. Whereas in the NFC, yeah, maybe you don't win the division, but you're still playing on the same weekend.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I think that's a good point. But I still think your first goal is to win the division.
Right.
And that goal is more easily attained this coming season, I believe, in New England than it is in Tampa Bay. So when you win that division, even last year, and people forget, they won 12 games. They should have beaten Miami. They would have had, the two seed. They would have been right on the door to go back to the Super Bowl again, despite all the problems on offense and Brady's somewhat declining production. It's amazing to think that 12-4 now looks like it was some sort of disaster because they lost that game to the Titans. But in any event, I think that his best road, now this may not be all about winning the Super Bowl. He's won six, and maybe he feels like that doesn't have to be the goal anymore. Maybe he's interested in other things and elevating the losingest franchise in North American sports that has some appeal to him. But as far as trying to get back to the Super Bowl, I still look at New England's roster, Tampa Bay's roster, New England's division, Tampa Bay's division, and in that context, to me, it was a mistake.
So, because we've been looking at this a lot, obviously, since the move happened, if you take the coaches out of it, because obviously Belichick versus any other coach, there's a significant advantage there.
Right.
But if you're just looking at the rosters, like, which roster would you rather have? I lean towards the Bucs, but it sounds like you would still take the Patriots roster.
Well, because I'm taking it in the context of comparing that roster to the rest of the division, the AFC East. Okay. And so I think it's hard to, and frankly, it's hard to say, well, take Belichick out of it. He's got 31 postseason wins, which is 30 more than Bruce Arians has. And to me,
right.
There's a big drop-off with every head coach in the NFL from Belichick. But Arians is not a guy like John Harbaugh or Sean Payton or Mike Tomlin who's proven he can win a Super Bowl. He hasn't done that. He hasn't even come close to that. He went 13-3 the 1 year in Arizona and won one playoff game, and that's it. So I think there's so much winning muscle memory on that New England roster, and I just love a guy like McCourty. And when you have guys like that on the team, I think it's a real difference maker. And I don't see players like that necessarily. I see talent on that Tampa Bay roster. You don't see any winning muscle memory, really, and I think that's a problem.
Now, you talk about Brady being Belichicked out, and we know how much of a competitor Tom Brady is. And if Bruce Arians' motto is kind of like, win or lose, we still booze, when does Brady get to that point and that maybe there's a chance that he becomes Bruce Arians' out because of the fact that, you know, we saw him here at 8-0 last year, and it was, you know, sad, frustrated Tom Brady every single week. What happens if he goes down to Tampa Bay and there's not that kind of same mentality of winning or the same standard that there is in New England? When do we see Brady go, wait a second, I might have made the wrong decision here?
That is an excellent question, because I've talked to executives around the league who've asked that same question. How's Tom Brady going to take the Bruce Arians style of coaching after a three-game losing streak? When there's not the same, I'm not saying Bruce Arians doesn't work hard. Every NFL head coach works hard. But he's not Belichick. There's no coach in the NFL that goes over situations nearly as much as Bill does. And the detail that he applies to every single day of his craft is just ridiculous. And I think Brady, I'm not saying he's taken that for granted, but yeah, after two or three losses in Tampa Bay, and maybe the approach isn't the same, the maniacal approach that Belichick has every week, I do think that could be very frustrating to Tom Brady. He doesn't know it yet. He's going to maybe live it and find out the hard way. But I do know there are executives around the league who are very familiar with Tom Brady and Bruce Arians and the Patriots who have asked that same question and how Tom Brady is going to react to a program that doesn't have the same absolute commitment to excellence every day that the Patriots do.
How much is this strangest of all off seasons going to affect Brady's acclimation to a new team, new teammates, new playbook, new everything? Because it does seem like he's up against it a bit.
Yeah, and there are questions around the league too. People wondering if Bruce Arians' offense is really a good fit for an aging Tom Brady right now, where you're looking to throw the ball down the field more, and that requires an offensive line that might be a bit shaky to protect Brady longer, and is he going to stay healthy? And so just trying to develop chemistry as well with his new receivers, trying to learn the Bruce Arians way of doing things, the offense. Yeah, if the preseason is cut into because of the pandemic, I do think that's going to have an impact on him. However, it's going to have an impact on every team in the league, and Tom Brady is so experienced. He has seen it all. So you got to believe he'll figure it out. And I do think he'll have a successful run there. I do think he's got a lot of football left in him. In fact, I had a phone conversation with him about an hour, two, 3 years ago, where we were talking about Tom Brady playing until age 46, 47, maybe even 48. So I don't think he's stopping at 45 as long as he's – I really don't. I never thought he was going to stop at 45. So I think he's got 4 or 5 years left, and I think he'll play a fairly high level of football for Tampa Bay.
What do you think qualifies as a successful season for Tampa Bay? Is it strictly making the playoffs because of the drought that they've had, or is it more than that?
Yeah, I was at their last playoff game. It feels like two lifetimes ago. Eli Manning and the Giants went down there and beat them that year. They ended up beating the Patriots in the Super Bowl in 2007. So it's been forever. So just they've got to make the playoffs. And they believe they will. They think they have the roster to do it. I frankly would like to see it. I'd like to see, even though I think he made something of a mistake here, I would have stayed with New England. But I certainly would root for Tom Brady. I think seems like a very good human being, and he's the greatest player ever. And I would like to see him have success there because I think it would be a fun story to write and talk about as well.
Now, you talk about Brady basically this potentially backfiring and how he's going to react with, you know, Bruce Arians and that style. What about Bill Belichick? You now have moved on from a guy that has basically, you know, put you in a position where, hey, maybe your defense wasn't as good, but offensively he was able to, you know, put that offense on his back, to a guy that has no experience, a fourth-round rookie draft pick in the sense, and with no offseason. Do you think this could potentially backfire on Bill Belichick?
Well, certainly it could. I still think the Patriots are going to win the AFC East. Until somebody beats them, I'll believe it when I see it. So I remember standing on the field in the old stadium the first Sunday they played football after 9/11 when Mo Lewis put that hit on Bledsoe. It's still the loudest hit I've ever heard on an NFL field. And when Tom Brady trotted in, I remember thinking to myself, oh, man, Belichick's in trouble. He went 5-11 in year one, and now they're 0-2. They're going to lose to the Jets here, and Tom Brady's his quarterback. And, of course, the rest is history, so you never know. I'm not saying that Jared Stidham's going to be Tom Brady, but we had no idea of what Brady was going to become. So I think, I know they like Stidham. I don't know if they like him as much as they like Garoppolo, but I think he's got a chance to be a good quarterback. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
The piece is on ESPN.com today. It's about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' pursuit of Tom Brady. Ian O'Connor, who wrote it, has joined us. Ian, we really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Take
Ian.
Care. That Later. Is Ian O'Connor. Now, to build on Wiggy's final question there to Ian about Jared Stidham, there are people who have their doubts about whether or not Stidham is the right guy or not. Rich Keefe has doubts about whether Jared Stidham is the right guy or not. Todd McShay also has doubts on whether Jared Stidham is the right guy or not. In fact, Todd McShay, appearing on Get Up, said flat out he might not be the guy.
From everyone I talk to in the organization, they're excited about his development. He has so much potential. He is gifted. He's been through a lot in his life. He's got some character and some grittiness and toughness to him, but he's not ready yet. I mean, that's the bottom line. He is not ready to lead the New England Patriots, in my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think, again, those that are saying that he is ready, it seems like they are mostly like team reporters, and that's all kind of come up. Oh, I don't know. Coincidentally, right. When Tom Brady's gone.
Right.
Like, were a lot of people saying how good of the backup quarterback is during the year? Did you ever hear any of that?
No.
And, you know, preseason, when he played a little bit more, there was obviously more discussion about him. And there was, you know, could he be the lone backup? But there were even debate then on whether or not they should keep Hoyer around, even though, honestly, if Brady goes down, they suck either way.
Right, but that was the
but
debate.
But that was a debate. Like, yeah. Hoyer, Stidham. And now, all of a sudden, he hasn't played any more games, but it's, you know what? He looks pretty good, and like it looks like it could be Stidham. I'm not saying Stidham couldn't do it. I'm just basing it more off of sort of the numbers and fourth-round picks. We have two examples of guys starting in the league right now, and neither one I don't think were supposed to be the starter year two.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They sort of, like, Kirk Cousins was drafted the same year as Robert Griffin III, and obviously Robert Griffin III got hurt,
right,
which they were prepared for, and then Cousins played, and then Dak Prescott beat out Tony Romo, but I don't know if they thought it was going to be as quick as that.
Right.
Stidham has to get it's not like he's going to win a job.
No.
Like, he's going to get forced into it by all accounts. So I don't know. The history of the league, there's not a ton of fourth round pick quarterbacks, so maybe that's not fair, but that's more how I'm viewing it.
I'll say this, and I've thought, you know, bringing Hoyer in showed me that this was Stidham's job. I'll put a proviso on that. Assuming they don't draft a quarterback at 23rd overall. If they draft a quarterback in the first round, then I'm not sure it's Stidham's job at all. But
yeah,
assuming they don't get one in the first round,
I think you're going to have a competition no matter
anyway,
what.
And I said that
first
was...
first round or the, not.
Like maybe a couple weeks ago, that was my high noon hot take.
Well, you stole your high
jacket. I kind of borrowed it from you, Rich. But I look at the quarterback position.
Mm-hmm.
It's a competition. And whether that's Stidham and Hoyer, or Stidham, Hoyer, and first round draft pick, or Stidham, Hoyer, Cam Newton, or whatever quarterback they get and maybe off the street, I don't feel like, because you brought it up, Rich, and you talked about two guys. When have you ever seen a guy going into the season as a fourth round draft pick saying, this is your job?
No, that doesn't happen.
It's very, very difficult.
I mean, even got, now I know there's a difference.
Belichick would never say that anyway, but it seems pretty clear to me He didn't bring Hoyer in here to be the starting quarterback.
I don't know.
He brought him in to compete. I think he could be the starting quarterback, and I think he knows here's the baseline. Like, in his mind, like, here's Brian Hoyer, and whether that's, I don't know what he thinks of, if it's wins, if it's, like, you know, percentage of the playbook or what. I don't know what he's thinking, but I'm saying there's Hoyer. So Stidham has to be better than that, and if he's not, we know at least we have Hoyer. That's how I think Belichick is looking at it. And I know he was on the team all year, so it's a little bit different than just straight out rookies. But if you think about, Baker Mayfield was the number one pick in the draft in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't start the first 3 weeks.
Right.
Like, top 10 picks.
And he wasn't expected to start because they had Tyrod Taylor.
And then he struggled. Maybe he got hurt, didn't he?
He hurt his hand, right?
But so even those guys aren't handed the job, and usually it's heavily weighted towards them getting it. Clearly, you don't invest a top 10 pick into that. But even like Daniel Jones, they were still going with the corpse of Eli Manning for a little bit, and then they're like, all right, we're done with this, now it's him. So for you to throw Jared Stidham,
this is rare water where you're saying here's a fourth round draft pick, and basically he's still a rookie, that we are going to hand the keys to the car for you to be our starting quarterback.
Yeah, because I feel like there's not a guy who has zero starts where there's not at least a competition. And maybe it's a sham competition, maybe again.
See, that's what I think. I think it's a sham competition.
But usually the competition.
But you're also banking on Stidham being good. Like, he may not. We don't know.
If they draft a kid 23rd overall, then all bets are off. The competition is real then. If the competition is between Stidham and Hoyer, I think it's a sham
competition. But see, I still believe it's real, because usually sham competitions are generally when the guy that they drafted is a hot first or second.
That's my point of why I brought up Mayfield and Jones and all those other guys. So Baker Mayfield, Tyrod Taylor, you know, Hugh Jackson, who's an idiot, but he goes up there and he says, you know, we don't have a starting quarterback, or Tyrod's our starting quarterback. You know they want it to be Baker Mayfield.
Right.
But if he doesn't just show up and guns blazing, they're going to go with the veteran, because they also don't want the rookie, or in this case the second-year guy, to get thrown into the wolves. It's so much easier to go veteran for a few weeks, then young guy. Then if you start the young guy and he sucks, how do you put him back in?
Right. It's going to be very difficult, you know, unless you know this is a young guy that is going to be here for the next 4 or 5 years, because we drafted him in the first round, where you go, okay, hey, guess what? This first year is maybe going to be a learning curve for him. He's going to kind of have to learn on the fly, and there's going to be a lot of things thrown at him, and it might not look good. When it's a fourth rounder, you're basically saying, okay, Hoyer, there's a chance for you to start here if you can outplay Stidham.
Mm-hmm.
Stidham, there's a chance for you to be our starting quarterback if you can prove it to us. Player X, whether that's the first round draft pick, hey, there's a chance for you to win this quarterback competition, or if they go out and get a street free agent, and whether it's Cam Newton or a guy like that, there's an opportunity for you to come here. Maybe you take less money, but guess what? You're going to have a legitimate chance of starting. That's what I think this quarterback position is.
The other part, and I said if they draft a kid, you know, 23rd overall, it might be different. Part of that problem, though, is going to be, even if you draft a guy 23rd overall, a quarterback, this offseason is going to be so screwed up in terms of preparing him. I mean, he literally might not be able to walk into the facility until the first day of training camp. And, you know, what kind of hill to overcome is that for him? It's going to be really hard for a guy with that kind of offseason.
And it's going to be for a guy like Stidham.
Right, that's what I think Hoyer is already, like, if the longer that plays out and the longer you go without, you know, practices and on-field stuff, the more chance I give Brian Hoyer of starting week one.
Right.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. We'll get you guys in on this discussion as well, because I do think it's Stidham's job to lose at this point, and he'd literally have to lose it, I think, for Hoyer to be the starting quarterback. But we'll see what you think. It's Dale and Keefe with Wiggy, and it's time to trend.
Now back to Dale and Keefe.
I'll let this cat out of the bag
on WEEI.
Tom Brady trotted in. I remember thinking to myself, oh, man, Belichick's in trouble. He went 5-11 in year one, and now they're 0-2. They're going to lose to the Jets here, and Tom Brady's his quarterback. And, of course, the rest is history, so you never know. I'm not saying that Jared Stidham's going to be Tom Brady, but we had no idea of what Brady was going to become. So I think, I know they like Stidham. I don't know if they like him as much as they like Garoppolo, but I think he's got a chance to be a good quarterback. I guess we'll find out soon enough. Take a chance.
My guess is they like Stidham. In fact, I've heard they like Stidham, but probably not as much as Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that's fairly safe to say.
I wonder if they like him as much or more than when they had Jacoby Brissett or like some of these other guys right. They had that were young. You know, obviously it's easy to say right now that, oh, Ryan Mallett sucked. Well, but there was also a time when they cut Brian Hoyer in order to keep Ryan Mallett as the lone backup. So what did they think of Ryan Mallett? And then when you saw him actually play for other teams, like, oh my God, thank God he wasn't the backup. So I don't know. The one thing I don't like, and I'm not saying Ian O'Connor is 100% guilty of this, but one of the arguments for Stidham and like people saying that I don't think Stidham's going to be the answer. When your response is, well, they didn't know Brady was the answer.
Yeah,
like,
no,
oh,
yeah,
boy.
Yeah.
Like, that's a once-in-a-lifetime type of player.
That may never get duplicated again.
Right. So, like, yes, someday there will be another seventh-round pick that ends up starting in the NFL and is good. Like, Gardner Minshew is a sixth-round pick. Maybe he'll be good. He's not going to be the greatest of all time, but maybe he'll be good. That's fine. But to think that a franchise is going to go back-to-back grabbing guys on the last day of the draft, and that's going to be their quarterbacks for 30 years, like, I think that's a bit
and
of a stretch.
And also to think that every time they say, oh, this guy's good, doesn't always mean that it's good, because we've seen it. You know, we've seen it over the number of years that, you know, when you look at guys that they drafted, the Patriots, you go, oh, everybody says, oh, he's good, he's good, he's good. And yeah. Then you kind of get him, you see him playing. Like, you know, you brought up Ryan Mallett being a guy. I mean, we've seen it with a number of guys that have come through this organization. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I do know, you know, from being around Belichick is just because you're a fourth-round draft pick and you might have the edge to be the starter going into camp, don't mean that you're going to start come week one.
Right.
And that's where I think this quarterback position is. Maybe Stidham does have the edge, but he's shown before, I don't care where you're drafted, who you are, if you ain't performing, I'll get somebody else in there to perform.
You know, Todd McShay was the one, we played the cut for you, where he says about Stidham, he's not ready yet, that's the bottom line. Matt Chatham, tweeting about that, said, the only people that know the true state of Stidham's game are the team and his teammates. You'd have heard similarly dumb proclamations about where Brady was before his first start. We were the only ones who knew. Real bottom line, no way to know unless you worked with Jared Stidham all last year. And it is fair to say, all of us, Todd McShay, you, me, anybody, talking about, well, he's ready, he's not ready, we have no way of knowing.
See, I think, yeah, I don't think anybody really knows for sure, but I also, there's no way that Belichick knows for sure what he has instead of.
No, but Belichick, the point that I've made about this all along is Belichick has watched him every single day and you know, has a decent idea of where he's at and what he can do and what he can't do. If he drafts a quarterback in the first round, what he's saying is Jared Stidham's not the guy. If he doesn't draft a quarterback in the first round, I think he's saying, yeah, he is the guy.
Yeah, but well, that's not necessarily because practice is completely different than a game.
Yeah, I mean, true. Of course it is.
You might have a guy in practice and he looks good. You know how many guys looked great in practice and then in preseason games, and then all of a sudden they get to a regular game and it's a completely different thing?
But so I disagree with the if they draft a guy or if they don't draft a guy in the first round, how they view Stidham, because what if they really like Justin Herbert, but they don't have the capital to move up and get him? If he fell to them, they would take him, and that means they think he's better than Stidham long term. So they might view Stidham the exact same way, but picking at 23, the top four or five quarterbacks could be off the board. And so, yeah, you think Stidham's better than Jake Fromm, but you don't think he's better than these other guys that maybe you could get in a trade or if teams decide to pass him over.
Let's get to the call, 617-779-7937. Tim's in New Hampshire. Hey, Tim.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, I think the biggest thing with all this is that we just need to give Belichick more credit. I know you guys have been great about that. Some of your yokels that night are a little more the sky's falling kind of thing. But looking at it, Belichick's done a lot over the years. I mean, when Brady went down in what was it, 2009 or 10, and he had a guy named Matt Castle come in, and he was a nobody as well, and he still won, what, 11 games or 10 games that year?
11.
11. So, I mean, I think we've still got to give Belichick a lot more credit. I mean, Brady, yes, all-time greatest quarterback ever, but Belichick's the greatest coach of all as well. And looking at this stuff, maybe Stidham is that guy, or maybe we just got to give him more credit knowing what's going forward.
Well, Tim, I mean,
I listen, but
yeah, thanks. Thanks for the call. I mean, obviously, there's no coach you'd rather have than Belichick. The two things about the comparisons, that's another one that gets brought up a lot, is the talent on the 08 roster compared to the 2020 roster is very significant. It's way different. And right now, we don't know if Stidham is even Matt Cassel. And I'm with you. Like, at the time, we didn't know a lot about Matt Cassel, and he ended up being, like, fine for that year. And he ended up being good for, like, 1 year in Kansas City, 1 or 2 years in Kansas City. There's a chance Stidham is light years better than Cassel. There's a chance that he's the same, and there's a chance that he's worse.
Right.
So as good as Belichick is, I'm afraid, like, if you have one of the bottom five quarterbacks in the NFL, that's a lot for any head coach to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chance that he is. I don't know. I mean, you look at all the different quarterbacks right now.
You have to look at the way you have to look at it is kind of like the only of what you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, he's a fourth round draft pick. What does that tell you? Tells you that, okay, he's a fourth round draft pick. So, and you look at it where it's
boldly
like,
spoken.
Yeah, you can't argue with that, Dale.
But, there's a reason why you were drafted in the fourth round. If you're better than what, you know, maybe teams think you are, they draft you higher. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to perform that way, but you just have to look at where he was drafted, right? If he's a first or a second round draft pick, can't we say that the expectations for him are much greater because of the
position? Yeah, he was the seventh quarterback drafted last year. So you had three first rounders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins. Drew Locke in the second round, Will Greer in the third, and then Ryan Finley earlier in the fourth than Stidham. But again, you can make the case, you know, there were guys drafted way, there were all those crap guys over Brady. There's guys drafted over Garoppolo. There were guys drafted over everybody. But
Stidham could be comparable to Dak Prescott, but he could also be comparable to Ryan Mallett, who was a third round draft pick.
You
don't know, but when you're drafting at that spot,
yeah,
that's the roll of the dice. It's not like you're drafting going, okay, this guy's going to be a starter for us in 1, 2, 3, or 4 years. You're going, okay, he has some skill. He's a good enough player. Maybe he pans into something, but there's no guarantee that. Where if you draft somebody in the first or second round, you go, we expect this guy to be a contributor.
Yeah, that's the other part of it is you know what direction that team is going in. Mm-hmm. Like they kind of tip their hand, first or second round pick, he is – unless the wheels fall off of him, going to be a starter. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth round pick, you're like, all right, I think the team likes him. Like, they drafted him, but how much do they like him? And if Jared Stidham starts week one, mm-hmm. how much of that is by default and how much of that is because, you know what, this was the master plan all along?
If we were sitting here and Tom Brady left, right? He left and there was no Jared Stidham.
Mm-hmm.
And they draft a guy in the fourth round. How confident would you feel about that team going?
Not very.
Right. And I think that's what you're dealing with when you're talking about Jared Stidham.
Yeah.
They basically are saying, okay, we drafted a guy in the fourth round to be our week one starter. You're not going to feel confident in that team, and you're not going to feel like – and I don't think people would be like, oh, that guy's going to be the starter. They're going to say, well, maybe it could be Hoyer. Maybe it could be any other guy that, mm-hmm. that competes. If they happen to draft somebody in the first round, you throw another name into the hat. But even if they don't, I still feel like the competition is wide open.
Mm-hmm. By the way, within the last few minutes here, the NFL and the Pro Football Hall of Fame have announced the 52 players and two head coaches selected to the 2010s all-decade team. And now they only took two quarterbacks, so, you know, the guys like Peyton Manning don't make it. The two quarterbacks that they have are Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Brady was elected unanimously.
Nice.
But some of the other players on this list are interesting. By the way, Rob Gronkowski is on the list. They have two tight ends, Gronkowski and Travis Kelce. Logan Mankins is on the list
as an offensive
guard.
Yep.
Antonio Brown is on the list.
Yep, definitely should be.
As a wide receiver. Yeah. The unanimous selections on offense are Tom Brady, Adrian Peterson, Joe Thomas, and Marshall Yanda. Thomas and Yanda are both, you know, linemen. Thomas a tackle, Yanda a guard. So the Patriots on this list, the 2010s all-decade list, are Brady and Gronkowski. Mankins was for a little bit until he got traded away, but he's on there. On defense, the Patriots don't have a single player on the list. Not one.
Is Revis on there?
I don't see the list. Darrell Revis is.
Yeah, so he's on there.
The corner. Yeah. Okay. For part of it, he was here for what? One of the years of the decade?
Won a Super Bowl. What about Chandler Jones? Is he on there?
I'm sorry. Chandler Jones is another former Patriot. No, current Patriots, I should say.
Oh, okay.
The unanimous selections are Aaron Donald at tackle.
Right.
Yeah, should be. Von Miller at linebacker.
Yeah.
Should be.
Makes sense.
Those are the only two unanimous. I'm sorry. J.J. Watt is a unanimous selection at defensive end as well.
What about Luke Kuechly?
Luke Kuechly is on the list.
Okay.
Not unanimous, but is on the list. The specialists, they have two punters, Johnny Hecker and Shane Leckler. They have two kickers. Justin Tucker was unanimous, and Steven Guskowski. They have punt returner and kick returners, but that's the list of specialists. They have two coaches, as we said, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I can't really argue with that.
Yeah, I can't argue with anything on that
list. I mean, the second coach, I guess you could... Yeah, Pete probably deserves it over Andy Reid.
Yeah, because...
For the 2010s?
Yeah, I would say so.
Won a Super Bowl, was that another one?
Yep.
Didn't hand the ball off when he maybe should have, but that's...
Could have had another one, yeah, for sure.
Maybe should have had another one.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good, though.
That list is... Yeah, good list. I would be fine with that list.
I'm looking at the defense, and as we said, there are no current Patriots on the list on defense. A couple of former Patriots, Chandler Jones and Darrell Revis. Another Tom Brady teammate's on the defensive list, Ndamukong Suh. He made the list.
I mean, he's
who
really
are the
good.
Corners? So it was Revis and...
Cornerbacks are Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that.
Safeties are Eric Berry, Earl Thomas, Eric Weddle. And then they list defensive backs separately as well. Chris Harris Jr. and Tyrann Mathieu. And I'm looking at the offensive side. Running backs, Frank Gore, Marshawn Lynch, LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson. Wide receivers, Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones.
So does that say first or second team, or are they just list four guys
just
right
list,
now?
They list four guys.
Right.
They list a flex.
What are we doing?
Darren
this is a fantasy
Sproles.
Team?
Sounds like it.
Why is there a flex?
And then tight ends, as we said, are Gronkowski and Kelsey.
Like if you're going to put four running backs, four receivers, and two tight ends, why do you need a flex?
I don't know.
And why does it need to be Darren Sproles?
Well, because
he was a little water bug. Why would it be Darren Sproles?
I'd rather have Christian McCaffrey on this list.
But also,
he's had one great year.
And they do the same thing on defense. And they've been doing this now, haven't they, on Pro Bowl, too? I don't really get why. So you have three corners, three safeties, and then you have two defensive backs.
Yeah,
aren't safeties and corners defensive backs?
Well, this is going to make Shime even... It's like a flex for defensive backs.
Everybody gets an award.
Yep.
Shime's going to be even more upset because Darren Sproles is the only player to make the All-Decades team at two positions, at flex and punt returner.
This is stupid.
He's electric.
Absolutely stupid.
He's the fourth player in NFL history to be named to an All-Decade team at multiple positions. The others are Mel Gray, who made it as a kick returner and punt returner.
Yeah.
Dante Hall, again, two returners. Deion Sanders, cornerback and punt returner.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good. So Brady was on the all 2000s decade team and in the all 2010s decade team.
Yep.
Yeah. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all.
The Kansas City Chiefs, who are obviously the defending Super Bowl champions, had six players on the all-decade team. The only team that had more was the Patriots.
There you go.
The Patriots, Darrell Revis, Logan Mankins, Chandler Jones, obviously Guskowski, Gronkowski, Brady, and the coach. So
pretty well represented.
Eight guys on the list played for the Patriots.
What about Cordero Patterson played for the Pats? Throw him on there.
Yeah, technically, I guess.
He played for him.
Kinda.
Yeah, throw him on there.
You got to throw Revis on there.
Yeah, throw him on there.
He did. He played 15 regular season games with the Patriots.
And he was a part of a Super Bowl.
He's on there as well.
Super Bowl winning team.
He won more Super Bowls than Mankins.
Yeah. That he did.
The majority of the players on the all-decade team are still active heading into the 2020 season.
Yeah.
Including Tom Brady, who will be 43.
How about Ian O'Connor saying he's going to play till he's 48? Did you catch that?
Yeah, I caught that one.
I don't know that I agree with him on that because But you know what? I didn't think he'd be this good this late either. So
nobody
what
did.
What the hell do I know? 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keefe with Wiggy, Sports Radio WEEI.
How many times has Rich Keefe been wrong?
Zero. Ever? Ever. Ever. Ever.
Now back to Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
Adam Schefter reporting that the Houston Texans are trading DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals.
Really?
Yes.
Come on. This isn't actually part. This is not part of a David Johnson deal.
Oh, my God. That is the worst trade in the history of football.
So we did think it was one of the worst deals in the history of the NFL when it was announced.
Yep. Stand by it.
And Still is. We're not changing our opinions at all about this. Interestingly enough, it came up over the weekend as well on a couple of fronts. Let's start with Bill O'Brien, who's the head coach of the Houston Texans and sort of technically is the general manager, the de facto general manager without the title. He's the guy making all the calls. He held a conference call over the weekend with season ticket holders.
Yeah, boy.
Because, you know, you knew that one of the things season ticket holders were going to ask is, what about that DeAndre Hopkins deal?
Yeah, it might
come
up. You know,
it might come up.
You know, the most popular jersey, the most popular player, the best player, all that stuff. He's gone, and we didn't really get anything in return. What's up with that?
Well, Bill O'Brien was ready for the question.
I would say the deal with Arizona was a deal that we felt was in the best interest of our team. DeAndre Hopkins is a great football player here. He made so many plays for us. We love DeAndre Hopkins. But he had 3 years left on a deal, and he wanted a raise. And we weren't going to be able to go in that direction. Capital T, capital E, capital A, capital M. Every decision we make, as long as I'm the head football coach here, will always be made in the best interest of the team.
If you have to spell the word team to a group of adults, you are an idiot. Like, that is embarrassing.
Yeah, and then I don't
what was more embarrassing, the trade or that answer?
Capital E, capital A,
then what?
Capital M.
Ah, yes. Team, all caps.
I'm still going to go with the trade.
Yeah, I would have kept DeAndre Hopkins. Now, if he's demanding, like, $30 million a year or something crazy and you know, you want to get rid of him, you got to get more in return. It's a lot easier. You don't have to spell team if you're like...
But hey, it shows that you can, I guess.
Oh, that's very nice, Bill. But if you say, well, we got 3 first-round picks, or like something crazy, if you're like, well, we love the return that we got. Because they clearly can't love the return that they got. And if they did, they're even dumber than I thought.
Let's bring that up here because Bill O'Brien and the Texans have taken a fair amount of heat about this trade. And... you know, some people would say if he had to do it over again, would he? What if he could do it over again? Interestingly enough, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, wrote about this over the weekend. He wrote, quote, per multiple sources, neither receiver DeAndre Hopkins nor running back David Johnson have passed their physicals.
Oh, boy.
As a result, Hopkins still isn't officially a Cardinal. Johnson still isn't officially a Texan. And in fact, he says, and here's the interesting part, they both have to pass their physicals before the draft.
Oh, so they got 2.5 weeks to get that done.
And you know, the obvious situation, now Brady found a doctor in New York who could do his physical that allowed his signing with Tampa Bay to become official. Evidently, Johnson had a preliminary physical performed on his wrist, his injured wrist. He passed that portion of the physical, despite reduced range of motion, that initially caused the doctor, not an NFL doctor, to hesitate. But Johnson still has to take a physical as to the rest of his body. Put simply, writes Florio, if Johnson or Hopkins fail their physicals, the trade will be off. As a practical matter, that gives both the Texans and the Cardinals an out if they want to avoid the deal, and if they can persuade their doctors to give either guy an F, quote-unquote, on his physical.
Well, Hopkins can't go back to Houston. Bill O'Brien's still there. Now, maybe he doesn't go to Arizona, but they got to figure something out. I feel like David Johnson probably has a good chance of failing his physical based on the last several years, unfortunately, for that guy. But, man, if that's not official yet.
And now you have to find a team for him.
Yeah. And here's the issue, because there was a second-round pick that the Cardinals were sending to the Texans and a fourth-round pick
right.
Texans are sending to the Cardinals in this year's draft.
Right.
Which is why the physicals have to be done before the draft. The trade has to become official before the draft. But now the question is, does Bill O'Brien, who's catching grief from coast to coast about this, go back to Steve Keim and say, listen, we gotta talk about this deal a little bit here. We gotta adjust this.
Capital A.
Well, thanks for spelling. I can't imagine that Hopkins failed his physical, so maybe he just didn't take it yet.
No, he hasn't taken it yet.
Okay, got it. Okay,
because neither guy, because of what's happened in the world.
Okay, so they just need to find doctors where they can get them.
They need to get it done. Yeah.
Well, now the question though is, with all the crap Bill O'Brien's taking, does he go, you know what? Maybe we got a chance to change this up a little bit.
No, because I don't think you can have that guy back in the locker room.
No, Hopkins has to be gone. Right. It's just a matter of, can you go to another team and get, now that every team in the league knows you're trading Hopkins, does somebody swoop in with a first-round pick?
No, because now you could probably sit there and go.
Although that's bad business.
Right, you could probably sit there and go, well, we can give him less for that if you don't, because. If not, he's going back to your locker room, and you don't want him.
He's not part of the TEAM.
Right. You've already showed your hand.
Yeah, that's
capital
true.
Capital P, capital E, capital A, capital M.
I'm like, can I get a refund on my season tickets here, Bill, while
anything,
you're there?
If anything, you might, you know.
Capital teams, N, capital O.
Teams might give him less, if anything, because he's already showed his hand.
But my point would be, I wonder if every team in the league even knew that he was available. And now that they do, they know that you have to trade him. But say you're the Patriots and you want to make sure that he doesn't go to the Falcons or whatever. Like,
right.
Would you have to outbid them? And then maybe the Houston would actually get what the value is.
But you already know that he wants more money, right?
Yeah, true.
You know,
that lowers
you
it a
know
little
that
bit.
Houston does not want him back. Mm-hmm. Right. So if anything, you have the leverage. Right. Here's what will and offer. You know what? If you can find a team that's going to give you a first round pick, go ahead and find him.
Yeah. Have right at it. Right?
At the end of the day, these teams know they don't want him back. And the only so they know that the Texans are willing to do whatever it takes to get rid of him. If they're giving up if they know that they're taking a second rounder and now this deal falls through. Oh, mm-hmm. You know what? Guess what? We're going to give you a late second round pick. Either take it or leave it.
Right.
And when the story came out initially about the conversation that O'Brien reportedly had with DeAndre Hopkins and you know, trying to make a comparison with Aaron Hernandez, and you're thinking, what the hell is he doing? I said at the time, if I were the owner of the Texans, I'd fire Bill O'Brien right then.
Yeah.
Now, if this trade gets screwed up and you're not bringing Hopkins back into your locker room, if Bill O'Brien's the coach, and yet the trade got screwed up because David Johnson failed his physical, let's just say for the sake of argument,
mm-hmm.
Then if you're the owner of the Texans, do you say, you know what, you got to go?
I feel like they've made their bed, though, with Bill O'Brien. I think they're just too committed. Like, if they allowed him to trade Hopkins initially.
And Jadeveon Clowney.
I mean, let's see what happens with Deshaun Watson. Now, Deshaun Watson pitches a fit. I know he's giving like sort of like little clues on Twitter
throwing
and stuff.
He's out there.
He's like quoted lyrics and everything like that. But if you lose him, then like, what are you hanging on to O'Brien for? You're not winning any. Like, see, he's that guy that you're winning enough for some owners to say, well, it could be worse. But you're never going to win the whole thing ever.
I don't even know if you're a playoff team now because
you may not be now.
I think after moving on from Hopkins,
Tennessee is better.
And can you make the argument that Colts?
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Text line is 37937. It's Dale and Keith. Wiggy's in the house with us here on Sports Radio WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.